Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, if you've got your Bibles this morning, let's go ahead and find John chapter 19. John chapter 19. Want to thank Pastor Logan and Peyton for holding down the fort last week as Holly and I were in Savannah. We had a wonderful time at the Pastors and Wives Retreat. The Georgia Baptist Convention does a wonderful job of putting that on every year, and so we try to take advantage of that as often as we can. And so, again, thank you, Pastor Logan and Peyton. They did a wonderful, wonderful job, and so we want to continue kind of our look at Jesus' last words from the cross before His death. And so we are still in the kind of the early stages of the cross. Next week we'll transition. But today we're going to be in John chapter 19, verses. The entire paragraph is verse 16 through 27. We're probably only going to read just three verses, really. So we'll pick up in verse 25. Well, we'll start in 23 because that's where kind of the sentence starts. And we'll read 23 through 27 this morning. So if you want to find that, kind of locate that, we'll read there. All right, when the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took His garment and divided them into four parts, one part for each soldier, also His tunic. But the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, "Let us not tear it, but cast lots for it, to see whose it shall be." This was to fulfill the scripture which says, "They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots." So the soldiers did these things. Verse 25. But standing by the cross of Jesus were His mother and His mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw His mother and the disciple whom He loved standing nearby, He said to His mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then He said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. All right, so let's begin talking about this scene here. Now, Jesus names, I want you to look, Jesus names several people at the cross, right? In verse 25, He says there's the mother of Jesus. Then there's His sister. And this is where the language gets a little interesting, right? Because there's some commas. And you and I both know, you can say, my mom's name is Linda. I can say, my mother, comma, Linda, comma, and the my mother, comma, Linda is talking about one person, right? Or I can say, my mother, comma, Linda, comma, somebody, and be talking about three different people, not two different people, right? Now, when you take John's gospel and you put together the other three gospels, the other three Gospels also mention women being at the tomb. The fun part is, they're all similar, but not exactly the same. So we're left asking the question, who was at the tomb? I mean, excuse me, we're going to ask that question on Easter Sunday, right? Who was at the cross? And when you put all of these accounts together, there's about six people that are named at the cross. And here's who they are. There's three people named Mary, which, in case you didn't know, was a very common name for Jews in the first century. Okay, here's who they are. There's Mary, the mother of Jesus. Then there is Mary's sister, whose name is Salome, who is, you'll know who she is in a minute. She's the wife of Zebedee, mother of James and John, the disciples, a.k.a. the Sons of Thunder. Love that nickname, by the way. And who is possibly, very likely, almost assuredly, Mary's sister. Okay, that'll prove important in just a minute. So you've got Mary, the mother of Jesus, her sister Salome, however you want to say it, right? Then you've got another Mary, wife of Clopas. We have no idea who this is. Just mentioned here in John, that's it. No other mention. Mary, the wife of Clopas. Then you have Mary Magdalene, right? And then you have Joanna. Now, I should have added this. I didn't look at my notes. Mary, the wife of Clopas, is almost assuredly the mother of these other two guys that are named in the other Gospels, mother of James and Joseph, or James and Joseph, okay? Then Joanna, and Joanna was a wealthy woman who gave out of the proceeds of her own money to fund the gospel movement or the Jesus movement. And then there's one man who is listed among the Jesus roving band of disciples, and that is John, author of this book, the disciple. Okay, so just to recap, Mary, mother of Jesus, Mary, wife of Clopas, who has two sons that are named James and Joseph, or James and Joseph, Mary Magdalene, so there's your three Marys, mother of Jesus, wife of Clopas, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary's sister, Salome, and John. Okay? All right, that's who's at the scene of the cross. Now, here's the question I had as I was writing my notes for this lesson. All right, you ready? It's probably the question you had and you would have if you read all of them. Why didn't John just clearly say who was there? Right? I mean, come on. Why didn't John just clearly say who was there? Well, let me get you to think about something. Who's to say in John's mind he didn't clearly say who was there? Right? For example, we may not know your family, but if you're writing a story, you may say, my aunt and my uncle and my cousin Vinny, right? Some of y'all didn't get that joke, but you will in a minute, right? And we may not know who your uncle and who your aunt were and who Cousin Vinny is, but you do, so it makes sense to you. So the reason John writes it the way he does is because it makes sense to him. Here's another little thing that it makes sense to John, because in John's gospel, we in this passage pick up on something that John does rather regularly in his gospel. Here's what it is. John does not use his own name to refer to himself in the gospel story. You will see John the baptizer referred to, but you will not see John the disciple's own name in there. It's just the beloved disciple. Nor will you find John's brother, James, his name in there. Nor will you find his mother's name. There is only one reference to anyone in John's family, and it is after the resurrection, and in his father, Zebedee. He's mentioned one time, and that's after the resurrection. In fact, Jesus' mother, her name is never mentioned at all either. It is just the mother of Jesus. In fact, none of Jesus' family's names are mentioned. It's just his brothers and sisters. So John is following the same pattern he's used for the entire gospel story to not reference himself, his brother, his family, or Jesus' mother's name. So then the question is, why does John list these other two Marys, Mary Magdalene and Mary the wife of Clopas? Here's why. Listen, because this is the first time those two ladies appear in the gospel story. So it makes sense if this is the first appearance of these people that John names them by name. Plus, if you include Mary, the mother of Jesus, there are now three Marys. So that could get real confusing. Let me just tell you, my brother-in-law's name is Travis. So I'm Uncle Bubs, he's Uncle T. And so we all use those names versus Travis, because if you say Travis, both of us are going to respond. Now, most of the time, if my sister says it, it's for him. If Holly says it, it's for me. So you kind of have a little bit of nuance. But anyway, we try to stick to the colloquial titles because it gets confusing. So why does John call out Mary Magdalene and Mary, wife of Clopas? Because they're new characters, and to differentiate them from Mary, the mother of Jesus. All right, so there's six people at the cross. All right, so in the midst of the chaos of the cross, Jesus sees his mother, knows she's there, and speaks directly to her and the lone male disciple who's at the cross, John. And he says two very short, very simple, but very profound statements. So first, he calls his mother's attention. Now, we might think it is harsh for Jesus to say woman, because that would be harsh in our culture. But for Jesus, it is a colloquial title to simply get the attention of his mom. So he gets his mother's attention, right, as if she wasn't already looking at him, but just to make sure what he's saying is directed at her, he says, woman, behold your son. Now, at first glance, we might think he's talking about himself. Hey, mom, look at me. You know, redneck's famous last words. Hey, y'all, watch this, right? But that's not what he's doing. He's getting his mother's attention to look at John. He's saying, hey, mom, in essence, don't look at me. Look at the guy who's standing right next to you. So he's saying, woman, behold your son, as if he could. He's pointing to John, the disciple who's right next to her. And then we know that because his next sentence is to John, and he says, behold your mother. Now, remember, John's own mother is there, right? John's own mother is there at the scene. Salome, she's there. So if Jesus is saying, hey, don't look at me, mom, look to your son standing next to you, not her son, her nephew, and he's telling John, don't look at your mother, look at my mother, what is Jesus trying to convey in this scene at the cross? Very simple. Here's what Jesus is saying. Very simple, but very profound and a very applicable for us today. Here's what he's saying. Hey, mom, I want you to treat John as if he was your son. Jesus knows that he's about to die. Jesus is also quite sure of the resurrection. He's already told his disciples three times, if you read Mark's gospel, that he's going to die and rise again. But he knows, even though he's going to conquer death, that he will not be on earth that much longer. If you read the after Easter story, he's there about 40 days, and then he ascends back to heaven from the Mount of Olives, right? And so he knows that even though he's going to die and rise again, and his mother will literally see him risen from the dead, he's not going to be here indefinitely. So someone is going to have to take care of her. So he says, mom, treat John, your nephew, not as your nephew anymore, but as your son. And then more importantly, he's telling John, "This I know you have your own mother, but I'm asking you to treat my mother as if she was your mother." That's what Jesus is doing. So in essence, if we could sum all of this, what is Jesus doing? From the cross, this will be important later, while he is dying, Jesus makes sure that his mother is cared for after he's gone. He is establishing the care of his mother. Now, this brings up a very important point, or a very important question. Here it is. Where's Joseph, Jesus' earthly father, and where are Jesus' brothers and sisters? Right? Like, where are they at? Naturally, it should be their responsibility to make sure Mary's cared for. Well, we know Joseph, the earthly father of Jesus, makes it to at least to Jesus' 12th birthday, because Mary and Joseph and Jesus and a group from Nazareth go down to a festival. And you remember the story in Luke? They lose Jesus. I mean, can you imagine the shock and awe and horror to, you have lost the Messiah? I mean, come on, right? You have lost the Messiah. And where do they find Jesus? He's in the temple. And Jesus acts like, hey, y'all didn't know this is where I would be, in my father's house? And Mary and Joseph are like, that is not in the text, but you can, you know, come on, you can kind of get the, right? So we at least know that Joseph is around to them. Most scholars believe it sometime after that date, when Jesus is 12, and the start of Jesus' ministry, Joseph dies, because there's no mention of him in any of the gospel stories. And if we're right in saying that John, the author of this gospel, is Jesus' cousin, and Joseph was around, certainly he would have mentioned him, right? But he doesn't. And in all of the stories where Jesus' family come to Jesus, it's always, his mother and his brothers and sisters. We also know that Joseph and Mary have at least 6 more kids, 4 boys and 2 girls, okay? Because it says brothers, that's plural, and sisters, so that's more than one. So they at least have 6 more kids. In fact, some of Jesus' brothers are named in the Gospels, but none of them are at the scene of the cross. Why are they not at the scene of the cross? Because they don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. And they will not believe Jesus is the Messiah until after the resurrection. Now, after the resurrection, they do come to believe in Him, but not now. So they are not at the cross because they do not believe that Jesus is the Messiah. So from Jesus' point of view, I can't trust the rest of my family to take care of my mom because they're not even here. Right? And so John, Jesus' most loyal, faithful disciple, the beloved disciple, is right there at the cross. And so Jesus hands off or passes off the care of his mother to John, his potential, most likely, cousin. And we know John gets the message because the story ends in verse 27 by saying, "Then he said, and from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home." So John gets the message, and Mary then goes to live with John at his house. Okay? So that's the story. And really where we want to spend the rest of our time this morning is, what does this story mean, and what can we learn from it? And I think there's three things that we can learn from this story, and maybe 3 things we can apply to our own life. So let's kind of talk about those really quickly. Here's the first thing that we can learn from this story is that Jesus cares for those in need. In a Jewish society, for a woman to not have a husband and potentially in Jesus' view, to not have sons that cared for her enough to be there for her when their own brother was dying, listen to me, meant she was virtually homeless and helpless. She potentially had no way to make money. She had no income. And so someone had to look after her. And so Jesus, while he is the one who is really in need, can we agree on that? Beaten, bloodied, dying literally within hours of his death, still has the capacity to say, she needs to be cared for and I'm going to make sure it happens. Pretty amazing. Jesus cares for those in need. And as I said 3 weeks ago, or previous Sundays, 2 previous Sundays, beginning of March, these statements that Jesus make highlight what Jesus has already done in the gospel stories. Has Jesus cared for those in need in the gospel stories? Absolutely. He's cared for people with diseases, with issues, with maladies and illnesses, people who were crippled, right? In John's gospel, just several chapters earlier, he healed a guy at a pool who had been there for 40 years, right? Jesus cares for those in need, and we see that even now with his own mother. Second thing we can learn from this story is that Jesus cares for women. Throughout the gospel stories, Jesus has routinely engaged women. Here's a short and no way comprehensive list of some of the women that Jesus has interacted with. Here in John's gospel, Jesus meets the woman at the well in Samaria, right? Live with a bunch of different women. Has to go to the well at the middle of the day so she won't face shame and ridicule. And Jesus meets her there. And listen to me, the first person in John's gospel to hear that Jesus is the Messiah is the woman at the well. Not Nicodemus in chapter 3. It is the woman at the well. Not his own disciples. Now, they're trying to put it together. But not his own disciples. The woman at the well. Jesus also raises the widow of Nain. Her son, who is dead, raises him. The sinful woman anoints Jesus in Luke 7. Jesus heals 12-year-old Jairus' daughter from the dead. And on the way to Jairus' house, Jesus heals the woman with the issue of bleeding. Then Jesus in Luke 13 heals a crippled woman who has been crippled for 18 years. Add on top of that Jesus had women who regularly traveled in the traveling band of disciples. And Luke records, a man of the first century world recorded with his own pen that the disciples and the roving band of Jesus' followers were supported not by men, but by women and money that the women raised. Now, let me just say, that would have been a tough sentence for most first century men to write. Just letting you know, for context. Jesus also has many women as heroes in the parables. Who is it who finds the lost coin in the house? Oh, somebody might need to read the parable of the lost coin. Luke 15. It is a woman. Who is the person who goes in front of the unjust judge? It is a woman. Who is the person that Jesus mentions who gave all she had to live on as he is sitting in the temple watching people give the offering? It is a poor widow woman, right? Now, let me just kind of clarify this a little bit. There's a great book. I would encourage you, don't let the size of the book deceive you. It is by Kenneth Bailey. It is Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes. Kenneth Bailey, I love, love, love. I cannot recommend Kenneth Bailey enough. He is a phenomenal author. Easy to read. The book, I'm just going to be real with you, the book's about this thick. Okay? But it is well worth every single page. Kenneth Bailey is a missionary kid who grew up in the Middle East. He grew up in Jerusalem, in Syria, in Cyprus, in Egypt, in Lebanon, and he lived there growing up and taught there for the majority of his academic career. He taught in university and in seminaries all over. And so sort of the stories that he would ask, he would go talk to Bedouin herders and ask them about the parable stories. And so his book is how to look at this, Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes, is how to read those gospel stories in the culture of the Middle East in the first century. Phenomenal book. And here's what he says about Jesus' care. He's got a whole section on Jesus and women. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Here's what he says. Give you three quotes. Jesus is traveling with a band of disciples consisting of both men and women was absolutely unheard of in his day and is even not up to social norms of current society. Think about that. In Luke's gospel alone, there are 27 different cases in which Jesus uses both men and women in couplets or paired stories to make a point. This was highly unusual in Jesus' day. Jesus' involvement and care for women completely cut across the grain of first century Jewish culture, which viewed, listen to this. This is him quoting ancient sources, which viewed women as inferior, daughters as a potential and constant source of shame, and viewed women in general as the reason for sin entering the world. Ladies, Jewish rabbis in the first century taught that when you were a daughter, your father was perpetually worried that you were going to bring shame on the house. Not the boys, just you. And what does Jesus do? Constantly and consistently shows care for women whom the religious leaders would have gone, oh, right? But not Jesus. And in this moment, while Jesus is dying, who does he care for? Last week, who did he care for? A thief. Who does he care for this week? His mother. Third thing we can learn from, let's transition. So how does this, we saw three things. Jesus cares for those in need. Jesus cares for women. And so now let's kind of apply, how does this apply to our own life? And I got three ideas for you. Number one, if Jesus cared for people, his followers should as well. That's me and you. If Jesus cares for others, you should too. When we look at the gospel story and we look at it across the board, there are many opportunities where Jesus had to care for only himself. for example, there are several times where the crowds are so ecstatic about Jesus and what he's doing. The text tells us that they go to make him king. Right? They're literally like going to put him up on their shoulders and like, hey, we're going to go take on Pilate and take on Herod and Jesus is going to be king. And the text tells us that Jesus slips through the crowd. And there's just, look, I don't know if y'all, we love The Chosen at our household. We have gotten into watching. If you haven't watched it, I would encourage you to watch it. Now look, when you watch it, realize it is a movie. It is not God's divine inspired word. Just listen to me. This is God's inspired word, not the movie. But there's this great scene, and it's not the one where they go to make him king, but it's the story where he preaches in Nazareth, and he basically claims divinity in Nazareth, and they go out to stone him, and the text tells us that they take him to a high cliff. And in the movie, now this is not in the text, so this is where it's not in the text, but Jesus tells the Jewish rabbi there, not today, and he kind of walks through the crowd. Here's what it made me realize. Listen. And it applies to this story where Jesus makes him king. When it says, hey, we're going to make him king. And it says Jesus walks through the crowd. At some point, somebody's got to go. Hey, where'd he go? Right? He was right here. What happened? Where'd he go? Somebody in the crowd. Now, none of the gospel writers record that they had a conversation about, did he just vanish? Where did he go? But something happened, and they're just standing there like mummies, zombies, and Jesus kind of, whoo, 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 whoo. Somebody has to go, where did he go? Right? And Jesus has all the opportunity, has the momentum of the crowd to make him king. And he says, hey, not today. Why? Why didn't Jesus allow the crowd to make him king? Because of you and me. And all of us as humanity, because Jesus had to go to the cross. Not for himself, but for your sin and my sin and our sin and the world's sin and everybody, past, present, and future, all of our sin. Jesus cared enough for us to not allow himself to be a king, but to go to the cross. Even in the Garden of Gethsemane, if you read the stories, late in the Garden of Gethsemane, when the soldiers come to get him and Peter and others are pulling out swords, and he cuts his ear off of Malchus. At some point in the chaos of all that, Jesus turns to the disciples and says, hey, don't you know I could call down 12 legions, i.e. 12,000 angels to come basically rescue us right now? And so the question is, well, why don't Jesus do that? Because he cares for others, you and me, all of us, and he knew our sin would not be dealt with if he called down the 12,000 legions of angels to deal with the minuscule number of temple police that were coming to arrest him. And if Jesus cares for others, we should too. Right? Many times that means we must put the needs of others above our own. And that can take a variety of different forms in a variety of different fashions depending on the situation, right? But if Jesus from the cross cares for others, you and I can certainly put others' needs before our own. Secondly, what does this passage call us to do? First, calls us to care for others. Secondly, this is, guys, men in the room, this is for us, okay? So ladies, you can just sit there and There will be a part for you at the end, okay? Just there's a little snippet for you at the end, but you can just sit there. Feel free to give elbows, do side eyes, whatever, okay? Just y'all can, then you can have conversation in the car on the way home. But guys, this is for us. If Jesus on the cross, dying in his final hours, can make sure his mother is taken care of, you and I should do the same. And you can say, but preacher, you don't know my mom. You're right, I don't. She might be a terror. She might be not the best person. She might be ugly and mean and hateful. But I'm telling you, if Jesus from the cross, while he was bleeding, dying, and hours from death, took care of his mother, then guys, we should make sure our mothers are taken care of as well. Now, I'm not telling you how to do that, because there's 1,001 ways that can look given on your individual circumstance and situation. But I'm just saying, as a responsibility, we have the responsibility to honor our fathers and mothers. There's not a one-size-fits-all model, so I'm not going to give you one, right? But I'm telling you, if Jesus made sure His mother was taken care of, I think this could include to all the women in our lives, moms, wives, sisters, daughters. I think that we can spread out that umbrella. If Jesus took care of His mother, we should be taking care of the women in our life, right? If you want to narrow it down to moms, since that's who Jesus, that's fine. But I think we can expand that to all the women. That is our responsibility as men, okay? All right, so, ladies. All right, ladies, here's your part. Okay, you ready? Listen. Listen very carefully. This is going to apply to all of you, but I'm just going to be real. It's going to apply to some of you a little bit more, simply because you, as one pastor said, have a little bit more vintage on you than others, okay? So, some of you will get that a little bit later. Okay, here we go. Was that all right? I'm okay with that? All right. Well, we're going to go with it, whether it was good or not. All right, here we go. Listen. At some point in your life, your kids might be responsible for taking care of you. Hopefully, they will do a great job. But listen to me. There will be something along the way that you don't like. It's not up to whatever you thought it was going to be. Listen to me. Don't be a jerk. Let them take care of you. It may not be exactly what you may want to live at your home, but you may not be able to physically do it. Don't be a jerk. Please. I have seen it go both ways, in and out. And it works out when men make sure their moms are taken care of, and when moms, you let them take care of you the best that they can. Ladies, love you. Just don't be a jerk. Okay? Can we do that? All right, there we go. All right, so what can we learn from this? Jesus calls His followers to be people who take care of others. Men, if Jesus on the cross can take care of His mom, certainly we should take care of our mothers and our wives and the women in our lives. And women, when we do, just don't be a jerk. Okay, all right. Last one. Here we go. If Jesus employed women in His ministry, the church should too. If Jesus employed women in His ministry, the church should too. Let's be real for a minute. There's a lot of us that would not be here today if it wasn't for Miss fill in the blank with her name or several ladies' names. For y'all young folks don't know about this, okay? So y'all older folks, my age and up, come with me for a minute down memory lane. Most of us would not be here if it wasn't for Miss in Sunday school, fill in the blank with her name, or in VBS with the felt board. Come on, y'all young folks don't know about the felt board. And the little butter cookies that we all put on our finger and we ate all the lobes off of it, you know. And then the little juice box. Can I get an amen from somebody? Thank you. There we go, right? Man, I used to love them butter cookies in a juice box in Sunday school. Man, that was great. The little coloring sheet. You know, felt board, great. That was an A-plus Sunday, right? And you and I would not be here if it wasn't for the women in our life who did all of these things, right? I know I sure wouldn't be if it wasn't for the wonderful Sunday school teachers, lady Sunday school teachers, and my mom, my grandma, and all the women involved in my life. And so if the Jesus movement of the first century and the early church after it needed women, so do we today as well. We need both. We need men and we need women. Now, let's be clear for a minute. The Bible is very clear that there are defined roles for men and women inside of the church. And to be biblically faithful, we need to be biblically accurate to those roles, right? So let's be clear. I'm not saying there's free-for-all and we do whatever we want to, okay? The Bible's clear on defined roles. But the reality is we need both men and both women to reach the globe with the gospel of Jesus Christ because we all have our own niches and our own gifts. Let's be real. If it were up to us men, things wouldn't look pretty. It'd be very utilitarian. The grass would look great. the inside, right? You know, ladies, we need you and what you have to offer to the church. The church needs you. Lastly, wrapping it up here, last point. All of us should strive to be a John in our group of friends. For example, John serves as a great example of who we all should be. Here's what I mean. Ask yourself this question. Am I the person who my friend would ask to take care of their mother? I'm not saying they would or they should, but are you the kind of man, if they were on their last breath and their mother was still alive and she didn't have anybody else, would they ask you to take, hey, bud, will you do me the greatest favor in the world? Will you take care of my mom after I'm gone? There's a lot of people that Jesus could have asked. He asked one guy. One. Did Jesus know he was going to the cross the night before? He sure did. He had 11 guys he could have asked. He could have pulled any one of them aside at the Last Supper and said, hey, bud, things are about to get bad for me. I'm not going to be here much longer. When it happens, I need you to take care of my mom. He asks only one of the 11, John. So you can say whatever you want to say. You say, well, John's the only one at the cross. Okay. But Jesus already knew. He could have asked somebody. He could have pre-selected this thing out. He asked one person. What does that tell me? There was something in John that Jesus saw that knew he would do a good job. And are you and I that person in our circle of friends? I hope you will be if you're not already. All right, so what can we learn? Jesus takes care of others. Jesus takes care of the most important woman in his life, his mother. What does that relate to us? If Jesus cared for others, we should too. If Jesus cared for his mom, guys, we should care for the women in our lives. The church needs, ladies needs you, men needs you, it needs all of us, and we should all strive to be the person who our friends would ask to take care of their mom.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.